Hey everyone, I'm Bruce, and you're listening to Clearly Unfiltered, a short-form podcast that offers clear, concise, unfiltered, and undoubtedly flawed thoughts on how and why I'm butchering some of my own sacred cows. In each episode, as you know, I'm going to let those steaks sizzle and serve them up medium rare or blue, and now and again, well done or charred. This is the second of a three-part mini-series about sex ed. If you haven't yet listened to part one, find episode 7 and listen to that first. In this episode, Ashley and I pick up where we left off and speak about the misconceptions about sex ed, how good sexual citizenship education can protect children, important insights about consent and boundaries, and the value of teaching empathy. We also speak about the importance of inclusive sexual citizenship education.
No teacher wants to have a lesson that feels like you're shocking the kids, like they're scared, and then go home to this big list of emails where parents are very frustrated that you did something inappropriately. That's just not very effective use of your time, and it's just not what we want to do as teachers. It's not like I'm in my math class teaching grade 7 math to grade 4s. No, that doesn't seem like a productive use of my time. I wouldn't get into teaching if that was something that I really wanted to do.
So, I mean, I love what you're saying there. I want to share with you what one prominent evangelical leader said recently on Twitter. He said, and he was speaking about kindergartners, he said, teaching kindergartners about sex is not educating, it's grooming. And I think I shared this with you before, but his whole departure point is that exact thing. Like, if kids know about this stuff, you're grooming them to become sexually promiscuous, or you're forcing them to choose their identity, you know, instead of just protecting them. And I use inverted commas there because I don't believe that's what it is. But that's what people think about comprehensive sexual education or sexual citizenship.
Often kindergarten reproduction is like having a chick in the class and watching it come out of the egg and having a conversation about that, or like my daughter and I just watched a video of like a baby beluga being born, and I said, that's how the beluga was born. She also knows that I went to the hospital to have her brother, so grandma had to come over. So we're continually having these conversations about reproduction with, if they have a brother or a sister, certainly these kids that come into kindergarten already have a little bit of understanding about sex and sexuality. And maybe they have two moms, and so they've heard about the in vitro process. So we just want to incorporate in an age-appropriate way these ideas. And making them sexually promiscuous, there's no why would a kindergarten teacher want to do that with their five-year-old students? If you're a kindergarten teacher, you are patient. You are loving. You will tie a shoe 47 times, even though that kid unties that shoe. I don't think you get into the education profession and being a compassionate kindergarten teacher and want to do anything like that. It's much more gentle. It's much more hands-on.
And I would argue, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ashley, but I would argue that if you're really part of an intentional, well-thought-out sexual citizenship program in a school and you're doing that well, I would argue that the stuff that kids are learning or the things that kids are learning in that space are actually protecting them from grooming. That they're able to have agency over their bodies. They understand what consent is. They understand how to say no. They understand what is appropriate and not appropriate because you're having those teaching moments with them that highlight those things. So I would say it's what our kids need.
I agree. We would do things like secrets versus surprises. So we'd have a conversation with kindergartens that would say, like, we don't really keep secrets, but we can have a surprise. So that would protect them against any sort of sexual abuse that's going on. That protects them from even their friends saying something or doing something and saying, don't say anything about this, you know? So we could have surprises for our dad on Father's Day. But we're teaching them that they always can go to a trusted adult, if they don't feel comfortable. we talk to them about like being touched. So like, do you like being touched on the shoulder? Do you like being touched on the arm? What if someone touches you on the bum? How does that feel? Kindergartens touch each other on the bum. They play like little tag games. But what if one of them, you know, doesn't feel comfortable with that? We're laying the framework to have those conversations so that those students, so that, that they know touching on the shoulder is okay, touching on the bum isn't, because then when we get to grade 3, grade 6, grade 9, those conversations, they've already felt comfortable and vulnerable enough to have that conversation. We can jump off and get into places where if in grade 9 someone touches them and they don't have their consent, they feel complete agency to stop that. And that could be in the classroom, that could, or like at the school, that could be in their home, that could be at their gymnastics studio, on the hockey rink. This is the sort of thing that we're empowering our students to just stand up for themselves and to speak up for themselves.
And this question of consent is so important, you know, and I think so often, we've had this conversation before, so often when you mention a word, let's say like consent, or you say you're teaching about consent, people immediately jump to the sex part of that conversation. But consent goes so much deeper than that. And I think if you're giving, you know, pre-K or kids in kindergarten, grade one, whatever it is, wherever you are in the world, if you're giving them the language to be able to express what consent means to them, that is super important. Like the way I grew up, you like hugged everyone who wanted to hug you. That was like done deal. Like if you didn't hug some crusty grandparent or whatever, not that I had crusty grandparents, but you know what I'm saying? Like some old person who rocks up and just wants to like hug you. If you didn't hug them, you were being rude. Whereas I've set a totally different standard with my daughters. I've said to them, you hug who you want to hug and you feel no pressure to hug anyone, and that includes me as their father. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have to hug me. I'm not going to force that on them.
Yeah. You don't want to. That's a good training ground for later. If you're mad at someone and they want to hug you, no, I need a minute. It's showing your boundaries. Yeah. It's giving them language to say, I don't feel comfortable right now to hug you, Dad, and probably in 15 minutes, they'll come up to you later or the next day or something. But that's important too, to know in the moment, I don't feel like doing this one thing, but 6 hours later, maybe I do feel like that. That's a good point with consent too. It's like, that's a reason why this stuff shouldn't just be taught in the home. So I just learned consent was yes or no. Like, and do you consent to this? Yes. And sometimes it was just like reading body language. So nowadays you might say like, do you consent to having sex? Yes or no. But we go through sort of a process. So we learn that there are many different layers to consent. So it would be like, we use a FRIES acronym. So like, is consent freely given? It is reversible. So you can say you consent, but then maybe 3 minutes into whatever's happening, you can say no. This could be sharing snacks. This could be giving your ball to your friend at recess. This could be having sex. This could be anything. So then, is it informed? Do you know what you're saying yes to? The E stands for enthusiastic. There's a difference between just saying yes and I agree, or, you know, nodding your head as well. If you're sort of reading body language, it's your head down. And then S is specific. So what do you consent to? You don't just give like a blanket consent, like, hey, you can come over to my house. And that means tomorrow as well. And the day after and the day after. Or, oh, sure, borrow my car. Well, then they come back a week later and ask to borrow your car. No, I specifically meant on Thursday at 4:00. So if parents are teaching consent, maybe they're teaching what they learned in school or from their relationships, yes or no. But now we know that there's a much more nuanced, much more specific way to teach consent. And that's why these sort of things need to happen at home and in the classroom, because your teachers are we're trained to do this. This is what we go to courses. You and I run a course, Bruce, where we support teachers to implement this work. So we know, for example, that from kindergarten all the way, or grade 3 all the way up to grade 11, our students are learning FRIES. So we can build on it. It's a really rigorous way to think about consent. It isn't just yes, no. We talk about what consent looks like, what it feels like, what to do if you don't have consent. So if my feelings are hurt because I want someone to do something with me, maybe sexually or not, what do I do in that case? Or what if someone didn't consent and I do something and cross the boundary? What do I do then? So let's say it's something easy with a snack. Well, maybe I could just get them a snack the next day. They didn't want me to eat their apple. I did. Okay. But what do, then we have conversations that says, okay, now it's bigger. It's higher stakes. We're looking at sexual relationships and we're in the upper grades. We've got the training ground done from sort of grade 3 with fries all the way up. And now how do we have conversations and sort of work through scenarios with our students so that they have a really good understanding so they never get in a situation where they do something without consent?
So I think this leads on to, and this isn't a question we necessarily prepared for, but I think it's an important one because often when we talk about this work, you know, there are, you know, you can teach consent because there are two ways of looking at it, you know, and I think often when you speak with boys and coming from being a teacher in a boys' school, they always want to know sort of what's the legal line, you know, what's right or wrong in terms of the law and consent, you know. But I think what a good comprehensive sexual education program does, or like you refer to it, sexual citizenship program does for kids, is it brings it down to this whole idea of a moral imperative in the sense that like being a good person or being a good citizen is about these things, interacting with others in a way that I am acknowledging who they are and what they want and desire is more important than me selfishly just taking what I want. The approach is so much better, I believe, when you're saying to people, this is what it means to be a good person or a good citizen.
And getting them to have the empathy to understand what it would feel like or what it does feel like when someone does something without your consent. So looking at it from the opposite side as well. So you want to think of being the person who, and I mostly support people kindergarten to grade 6. So it's not necessarily in a sexual context, but what does it feel like when someone does something without your consent? How do you feel in that moment? How do you communicate that in that moment? And then what do you do? So it isn't just from the side of like, okay, how can I do this without breaking the law, which is a funny way to look at it. But it's more just like, how can I do this so that I know that that person feels respected and honored at the end of the day, the same way that I would want to feel respected and honored.
Yeah. So actually, I want to dive into this one, change tack a little bit. Why is it important to have good, comprehensive sex ed? I prefer the word sexual citizenship education. Why is that in your experience as someone who's seen this working well in a school right through from kindergarten right through to high school?
I think that these concepts come up all the time, even if it's not in the curriculum. So you think of like even grade 6, like these games of like, I don't know if you have this in South Africa, it's strange to me, but like guys will like bag each other. They'll like hit each other in the balls and then it is obviously really painful. And then the other one sneaks up and does it again. So these conversations are so strange. Right?
I'm sure it happens, yeah. I'm sure it happens all over the world.
I know it happened when I was in high school, and I know that it's still happening now. But, like, these things are coming up, and if you don't give your teacher the language and the leverage to have a conversation, then that teacher's just punishing and saying, we don't talk about it, or you're in trouble because you did that. Whereas, if you've got teachers that are empowered to say, that's a consent issue. We need to talk to your parents about this kind of thing. We need to talk to the classroom and say, how does everyone generally feel about this game? 99% of the students probably feel not so great about it. I just think that you need to empower your teachers to have these conversations that are coming up anyway. You can pretend like they aren't, but they are. And as well, in all of the books that we're reading, let's say you're an English teacher, in all of the books you're reading, you're teaching one just heteronormative way of being. So you're teaching it in a way that's just this really narrow focus, and I don't think that honors our students. So if you're looking at sort of opening up your books to include LGBTQIA people, to have lots of different diverse families, even just like general diversity, lots of different cultures and ethnicities in your books, that's sexual citizenship. It's as well, like digital citizenship falls in underneath that. We haven't spoken about that as well, but it's so important to empower our students to have the tools to look at the internet in a critical lens.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you mentioned the internet, and a lot of the research is saying is that kids as young as grade 4, you know, their primary source of sex ed, if they're not getting good comprehensive sexual education at school or in the home, is Pornhub, because it's easily accessible.
And 9 years old,
grade 4. Yeah. And so, you know, I think you said it once in one of our classes is where do we want our children to learn this stuff? In a safe, affirming environment that's, you know, full of empathy. And I think there is partnership here to be had with parents. And I want to talk about parents in a minute, but we simply can't be afraid of this work. It is so important to empower our kids to know how to respond, to have agency over their bodies, to understand consent, both in the giving and receiving of consent, and how they respond to someone who draws boundaries too, I think is an important part of the consent conversation. Understanding what is appropriate and not appropriate, particularly for younger kids, and how adults interact with them. And you know, we simply don't want them learning that stuff on unfiltered and unethical kind of internet forums.
Or from their friends. That's where the research says they get it. They either get it from their friends or from the internet. So do you pick
their teacher? And where are their friends probably getting it from?
Exactly. So do you pick their teacher, their friends, the internet, or their parent? And ideally, like you said, in tandem, it should be their parent and their teacher working side by side to make sure they have comprehensive, that word is super important, comprehensive education when it comes to the internet.
Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for the last episode of this series, which drops soon. In the last part of the conversation, we speak about how sexual citizenship in schools can promote inclusion, especially for marginalized kids, and we address the concerns parents might have when it comes to comprehensive sexual education.
I think people are scared because they're not exactly sure what's being taught. They're like, oh my gosh, my kindergarten is being taught about sex. Okay, what specifically? Because you can go look at the specific years that things are taught. You can also ask your teacher for a heads up. So listen, you can ask the teacher for the curriculum as well. They'll send it to you. We're not hiding what we're teaching. That doesn't make much sense.